few people have asked for a little more information about Loki, which I'm kind of surprised and baffled by, but I'm happy to offer whatever information I can. A disclaimer first, though. This is going to be a bit more from personal experience rather than strictly factual like the last rambling I posted. So, disclaimer number two. Yes, they are both necessary. I've recorded this twice now. This is the second time. And I have notes. The first time, it got a little more, that's a lie. It got way tangential and more difficult than necessary to connect things. I mean, that's just ADHD. Again, I do have notes, and I had notes last time too, but I skip around a lot, even if I try to organize things in a linear way. My brain is like, no, fuck that. I don't try to do that. I really fucking don't. It just happens because I have a chaos brain. What's your superpower? Anyhow, I'm re-recording part of this because the original did not exactly string together as well as I was hoping it would, and I don't want to confuse the absolute fuck out of anyone, because I confuse the absolute fuck out of myself. Let's be real here. Before I begin, let it be known that I have a brand new set of runes, Elder Futhark, and I ordered them as a late birthday present to myself. And the box. Ooh, oops. That was probably loud, I'm sorry. The box is gorgeous, and I can't stop huffing the polish / paint / stain on the box because it smells so fucking good, and it smells so good. It's a gorgeous box and a gorgeous set of runes too, but they smell good. Okay, stop huffing fucking fumes, Echo. Okay. We're going to pick one out of a bag, just for giggle shits, to see how this shit's gonna turn out. Is this gonna be accurate? Fuck if I know. We're gonna find out. Okay. And then I'm going to put them all back in the box. Issa. Rune of Ice. Chill. Oh. Frustration and obstacles. Only patience can persist. Well, I suppose that means please be patient with me. I am doing my damnedest to be patient with myself as well. So, like, I would appreciate yours very much as well. Essentially, I am hoping to offer a perspective that you may not / probably do not know of Loki. So, fingers crossed, I can actually do that. Okay, let's get the runes put away. As I do this, we're just gonna talk. This will keep part of my monkey brain busy. Yay! So, when I say outside the outsiders, what do I mean? I mean that people like me, for multiple reasons, don't really fit in with the misfit brood that we probably should feel comfortable with. I, for a while, thought that I was very simply bisexual, which was not easy. Oops, I dropped one. Which, ooh, let's not get distracted, Echo. I thought I was bi, which isn't by any means whatsoever, by any means, a bad thing. However, bi people are not well accepted in the LGBTQ+A whatever community. Apparently you're supposed to like choose one or the other, but when you don't control who you are attracted to, I mean, who the fuck does control who they're attracted to, really? Kind of impossible to make a choice between genders, and more than that, it's not as if bisexuality means strictly one or the other. Technically, the term bisexuality is used to describe someone attracted to multiple genders. If you want to get into the etymology of the word, sure, the prefix bi means to. This is not how the term is used. Language is fluid. A dictionary definition, a etymological definition, is not going to last through the ages. And it's not going to apply in every context, either. I must sniff the box. This smells so good! Okay, I'm done. So, while I did think by fit for a while, and yes, this is connected to Loki, believe it or not, I still didn't quite fit with other people in the LGBT community, except for, you know, bi people, who I thought were my people. But really, I didn't fit in with bi folks either. I mean, bi and pan can be used interchangeably. Essentially, they mean the same thing. I just prefer the term bi. Hard to explain why. It doesn't really matter either, though. I didn't quite fit there either. So even in the little bubble that I sort of fit in, it wasn't exactly a comfortable fit. It took a while for me to figure out, oh, I'm just not attracted to people the way everybody else seems to be. I'm attracted to people, not a physical appearance, not seeing someone at first glance. That doesn't spark anything sexual in me. I don't know why, it just fucking doesn't, and I can't make it. I don't even want to try to make it. That's a betrayal of me, you know? Which can fit in with pansexuality a bit more than bisexuality, sure, if you are going by an oversimplified definition. The primary definition for pan is people who are attracted to people, not gender, which, sure, could apply. But I don't really feel much for people until I have a personal connection to them or can see them for exactly who they are, not for whatever appearance dictates, which, I mean, nobody really controls their fucking appearance. Yeah, you can dress yourself however you'd like, beat your face however you'd like, get surgery, whatever, style your hair exactly how you'd like, color your hair exactly as you'd like. But, I mean, that's all just surface. It's not really you. It's an expression of you, sure. But is this really you? I mean, I completely understand altering the outside to match the inside. But that doesn't exactly appeal to me. It doesn't call an attraction to me. I mean, certain aesthetics certainly can, but it's not really a physical attraction, and I don't know how else to define that. So, while the bi and pan, we're gonna say kitchen sink, because I can't think of a better descriptor than that, seemed to fit for a while, it didn't really. And something I have come to learn very, very rapidly is that asexual people, my people, we are not accepted in the LGBT community, which, not surprising, if you do not adhere to a very, very strict standardized binary, you are not, quote-unquote, one of us. Which, I say us, but I don't mean us. I mean, shit gets real clicky real fucking fast, and unfortunately this is just a facet of people on a societal level. It's sad, it's pathetic, but it exists. Can't really do much about that. It's sad that people don't really fucking grow out of bullshit high school fucking politics. I mean, granted, this is coming from someone who was in independent studies for all of middle and high school, so I didn't have to deal with that stupidity. And really, I fucking loathe watching shows, reading books, literally fucking anything said in a goddamn school, because high school personal politics are fucking stupid, and people don't fucking grow out of them. It's sad, it's pathetic. While I would love to teach, and still to this day hope that at some point I can, the schooling required. May not be hospitable to my weird chaos brain. There's a lot of order and structure in school, which bleeds over into applying order and structure where they ought not be. And I mean, if we can make school a little more unhinged, my brain would appreciate that, but I'm on a tangent. Okay, we're going to stop the tangent. So while the LGBTQA+ insert whatever letter into the acronym is necessary, community is still generally an outsider kind of sub-community on a worldwide level. I don't exactly fit into it either. This is what I mean by outside the outsiders. This is one way. Loki and I align very well. Two, if you've been listening to, like, anything I do, like, anything, particularly the non-sexual stuff, which, granted, there isn't much, but, you've probably noticed I have a weird brain. I like to call it a chaos brain because that's essentially what ADHD is. It's a chaotic brain. Neurodivergence is also a very outsider kind of thing. Having any form of mental illness or learning disability or executive function disorder is going to put you on the outside of most fucking people. Is this wrong? Fuck yeah, of course it is. Does wrong or right really matter here? No, because the stark reality is that you are not going to be accepted exactly as you are. As well, I don't know if this is exactly an ADHD thing. On a social / interpersonal level, my ADHD makes having any form of contact with me real fucking weird, because I am, in short, real fucking weird, yo. Which, probably easy to notice, but not impossible. Far, 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 far from impossible. Where was I going with that thought? I've had 2 cups of coffee. That's not where I was going with that thought. That's just where that thought went. On top of ADHD, I have another fucking comorbid disorder of shit. CPTSD, which can manifest in many, many ways identical to that of ADHD. So having both is kind of a clusterfuck. In particular, with social situations, I do best one-on-one, really. And even then, it's difficult. I am very, very, very much an isolationist. I've been a loner since I was a very small child, and I have no real interest in changing this whatsoever. It's difficult to find people who can somewhat meld with my weird brain. Well, meld isn't the right word. Gel with my weird brain. We're gonna say gel because that sounds better. And not only gel with my weird brain, but go with what my weird brain does and help me redirect my brain, which, not easy to do, but patient people and people who are genuinely interested in learning about people different than they are, we can become fast friends. And I'm a pretty fucking friendly person to begin with. I mean, overly so, generally. And it's not as if this is at all faked. I'm genuinely interested in other people. Do I pull back a hell of a lot? Oh, yes. Very, very, very much. Because it is much easier to be isolated and alone than deal with anybody else. Sometimes it is hard enough for me to wrangle my own brain that I do not have the capacity to work with anyone else's. I mean, usually it's to people-y outside, which isn't a read on others. This is me taking the time and space that I need to be the fuck away from others, which has led to, fairly extreme isolation, but, it's a coping mechanism. I'm working on it. As I was saying, ADHD and CPTSD both make for some weird interpersonal shit, my dudes and dudettes, if you find dudes to be, like, overly gender identifying. I'm trying to think of an NB term, but coming up short. If anybody can think of one, please let me know. Where was I going? Ah, ADHD, CPTSD. These even isolate you from other mentally ill people. So, outside the outsiders fits in this context as well. Further, and this isn't one that applies to me personally, rather one that I have had to learn in relation to others. Another outside the outsiders kind of classification, another very Lockean classification, is in regards to people with cluster B personality disorders. I would argue that anyone with any cluster B personality disorder, particularly borderline, histrionic, and antisocial personality disorder, is particularly Lockean. These all cause intense emotional responses to minute stimuli. They all tend to lead to people either wittingly or unwittingly manipulating others. And these are all extremely difficult disorders / behavior patterns for the person to correct. And much of the time, with antisocial personality disorder in particular, the individual doesn't even fucking want to. They don't have any interest in learning to manage their own chaos. They don't care to. They're not obligated to, unless they face some kind of steep consequence, which I see as a very, very, very Lockean thing. The thing with cluster B personality disorders is these people are not seen, recognized, and validated as members of the overarching mental illness community. I need a tissue. My nose is running like crazy. Oh, I'm allergic to everything.
I'm allergic to being alive.
That is the new alive. Dispatch the new survival, a pointless point of view. Okay. Cluster B people. They're not seen as members of the fucking overarching mental illness community. More than that, rarely are they regarded as people at all. Which is fundamentally fucking wrong. Yeah, these people can be extraordinarily destructive to themselves and to others. Mostly to others, usually. However, this does not make them any less ill. This doesn't make them any less sick. This doesn't make them any less like us. Sure, they're different from us. And sure, they tend to exploit the vulnerability of others. Particularly with ASPD, NPD. Borderline people can too. The difference is borderline people will feel bad about this. People with NPD or ASPD, it's extremely unlikely that they will. Not impossible. Extremely unlikely with NPD, but I digress. They are people at the end of the day. Sick people. Whether they can be healed or not, whether they are willing to manage and mitigate their behavior or not. They are people. That's all. People in and out of the mental illness community prefer to demonize anybody under the cluster B umbrella. It's easier than recognizing them for the extraordinarily hurt, wounded, reactive people that they actually are. And the first person I fell in love with was, at the time, undiagnosed. He wasn't old enough to be diagnosed with ASPD. It would be extremely easy to hate him, particularly given all the shit he's put me through, and all the shit he perpetually fucking puts me through. However, I don't. I can't not see the brutalized, bloody, and beaten little boy inside of him that fuels every fucking thing he does. That doesn't mean I have to give him access to me. That doesn't mean I have to entertain him ever again. No, of course not. But I recognize his wounding, and he is, at the end of the day, just a person. much as he may like to believe that he is something more, some omnipotent, all-powerful thing, some fucking villain, some demon. He's not. No one is. He's just a very, very, very hurt, very, very, very sick person. Nothing more. And that is difficult for him to accept. It's difficult for others to accept in regards to people like him, too. This kind of radical empathy is fucking difficult. It's painful. But I know I didn't fucking do everything I should have in that relationship either. I'm not free of blame, of fault, by any means. He and I both fucked up. It would be a gross oversimplification to claim otherwise. I'm not fucking innocent. Absolutely not. And as much as he likes to claim, and may even fucking believe, that he's the kicked puppy in all of this, he's not. Neither of us are. Recognizing that nuance, in large part, came from Loki. I mean, to be perfectly honest, I hadn't really given Loki much thought as a personal guide before meeting this boy. He works with Loki, or used to. I don't think he has a positive relationship with Loki at this point. I could be wrong. Loki tends not to take kindly to self-delusion. And this person does not like being called on their bullshit. At all. Loki will call you on your bullshit. So, really, it seems to me that Loki put us on each other's paths for a reason, because there was a hell of a lot he and I needed to learn from each other, whether we wanted to or not, no matter how fucking painful it was. And it was. It's not just was, it is still fucking agonizing. But Loki will do what is necessary. What will have the most impact on you, for better and for worse. Because if a lesson doesn't resonate in a very reaffirming, self-affirming kind of way, a painful lesson is the next most impactful lesson. Although really, I would say that a painful lesson is more impactful than a soft, warm, fuzzy kind of lesson. They're harder to disentangle yourself from. And I know this from experience. In the aftermath of that whole mess, disentangling the perceptive illusions I had surrounding not just him and that relationship, but that I'd internalized myself, both in that relationship before that ever fucking began, and in the immediate aftermath. That was, I think, part of the required shadow work with Loki. This is what I mean when I say, if you are not ready and willing to do your shadow work, do not make any fucking attempt to work with Loki. For your own sake, don't. I mean, nobody is ever really 100% ready. But it's not so much about being ready to do it as it is being ready to accept that you will not ever really be ready to do it, just biting the bullet and starting. That's more what I mean when I say ready for it, ready to do it. It's not exactly being ready to take that shit on head first. It's more recognizing that no, I'm not ever going to exactly be ready, but I want to get started here and now. For my own sake. And that's fucking difficult to do. It's painful. Very. And to be fair, everyone's shadow work is very, very different. Some of us have longer, darker, bleaker, more imposing shadows than others. And that doesn't make them worse. That doesn't make other shadows better either. We just have different lessons to learn. Different things to endure. None are better than any other. None supersede any other. And none are really worse than any other. It's entirely individual and entirely personal. It's utterly subjective to your own experience. So what hurts one person the most isn't going to hurt another person the most. That's just reality. What hurts me is not likely to hurt someone else to the same depth, in the same ways. This is how we know we are all individual. And a big part of working with Loki is fully seizing your individuality, becoming utterly self-assured. It's hard, but a massive component of doing this is facing, accepting, and working with the parts of yourself you do not fucking like, the parts of yourself you hate, the parts of yourself you fucking fear. And I can't ask anybody else to do that. I'm not going to insist that anybody forces themselves to be ready. That's fucked up. That's not right. Yeah, sure, I could pressure others to do things they don't want to do. But I fucking loathe when people do this to me. Why the fuck would I do that to someone else? I mean, do I always recognize when I am over-enthusiastic, over-excited? No, of course I don't. That's part of my ADHD. But once I do notice, I pull back. I can be a hell of a lot for others to handle. I realize this. I can be a hell of a fucking lot for myself to handle, too. I don't want to subject anybody else to my bullshit unnecessarily. I mean, if I'm letting someone into my weird little brain in my weird little world, that's different. I'm not asking anybody else to come in if they don't want to. It's entirely up to them. I'm simply opening a door. Whether anybody chooses to cross that threshold is on them. No hard feelings if you don't want to. It's okay. Another facet of Loki is the fact that he is polyamorous. I absolutely the fuck am not, and have zero interest whatsoever in any way entertaining anything remotely polyamorous in my life. Ooh, oh no, I gotta turn my filter back on. My light turns off at 6 a.m. It's 6 a.m. Turn back on, fucker! Thank you. Oh, that was gonna give me a headache. I'm a very, very, very monogamous person. I don't. When I actually start to take that kind of liking to someone, I don't really see anyone else. And I don't mean like see in a dating context or anything like that. I mean nobody else pops up on my radar in that way. So if someone else can't reciprocate that, or just won't reciprocate that, then there's nothing we need to share whatsoever. I'm just going to get hurt. They're just going to get hurt too, so what's the fucking point? It's more merciful just to say no, which is a challenge of working with Loki, really, but it's not quite the same with non-physical forces. They play by different rules than we do. They're designed to. They're supposed to. It's just in their nature. While this is in his nature, it's not in mine, and it's not something that he has ever forced on me either. I made the choice to figure out exactly how to untangle certain traumas from my psyche with his help. It's no underestimation to say that he is a large part of why I'm even here. And also part of why I don't really want to give up on this. Despite a certain someone who would like to do their damnedest to ensure that I cannot, that I run away from him, I don't want to. And why give my power away to someone who just wants to take it anyhow? That's fucking stupid. That does not do me any good. Really, he has no fucking power. I do. He gives the illusion of having power and gets off on the illusion of having power. Because he never will know real power. A fundamental lesson of Mjolnir itself, of Thor's fucking hammer, is learning how to wield personal power well. On a personal level, this may be a little too out there for some of you. I need to make these notes. Goodbye notes. I have an aspect pattern in my astrological natal chart that is called Thor's hammer. This aspect is built entirely of difficult aspects. A sesequadrate and a semisquare. It's a difficult fucking minor aspect pattern to have, particularly in the signs I have it in. I also have it as part of a black kite, which is another aspect pattern which heightens the hammer itself for me, which also, a difficult one to have, as the pullback part of the arrow, which this isn't going to make sense to anybody who doesn't fucking know astrology. That's fine. I'm trying to figure out a way to explain this that it makes sense, but it's not working. The Thor's hammer aspect pattern makes an elongated triangle. At the top of the triangle, I have a T-square, which makes a smaller, much smaller, triangle, which isn't part of the Thor's hammer aspect. It's an add-on to it. If you kind of look at it through squinty, blurry kind of vision, it sort of looks like a bow and arrow. The part at the back of the arrow, the part you pull on, is all in Scorpio. It's a three-planet conjunction / stellium in Scorpio, opposing a Taurus moon. The moon is the focal point for the entire kite, as well as for the hammer. It's what can mediate everything else in it. So, pulling the bow and arrow back, firing directly at the moon. The moon is the fastest moving planet in the entire solar system. And yes, technically the moon is not a planet. We're talking astrology, not explicitly astronomy. The moon is extremely emotional. I mean, it is your emotional center, really. It's a very, very volatile planet, very fluid. It fucking fluctuates. That it has a tangible effect on the Earth's tides is not insignificant. This is part of what illustrates how the moon functions in us. It has a massive effect on our interpersonal relations as well as our internal world. Everything we feel, what we perceive of what we feel, it's all filtered through the moon. So having such a sensitive point in my chart as the focal point for so much difficult energy and difficult fucking aspects, difficult placements, it's challenging. Very fucking challenging. And having Venus as part of the semi-square, that compounds the fucking challenge. Venus in the seventh house in particular compounds that fucking challenge. Venus parallel Pluto. which Pluto is part of the opposition to the moon. It is part of the pulley back part of the bow and arrow, pointing right at the fucking moon. It's a lot. A hell of a lot. Not more than I can handle. I just have to learn how to fucking manage it. And this is part of why I think Norse mythology in particular speaks to me so much. Also because there are many parallels to Slavic mythology, and it's such a fucking bitch to find much in terms of Slavic mythology that's actually historically factual. As well as half of my lineage being Celtic. There are many, many, many parallels between Celtic paganism and Nordic paganism, as well as Celtic Celtic mythology and Nordic mythology. They mirror each other in many, many ways, which is something I fucking adore about mythology overall. If you look for reoccurring themes in all forms of world mythology, you can find underlying threads that bind all of them together. The details of our stories change, but the stories themselves don't really. I mean, isn't it Shakespeare who said, "All the greatest stories in the world have been told time and time before"? Something like that. I'm paraphrasing. And he's right. Absolutely fucking right. Originality is in how you express yourself, not in the ideas themselves. The bard himself was quite an illusionist. And on the subject of illusion, allowing yourself to be disillusioned. It hurts. I used to be very, very extremely escapist. I mean, I used escapism as a coping mechanism, which in certain doses isn't a bad thing. To the extent I used it, however, it was extraordinarily detrimental. And in working with Loki now, and since then, really, it has become so, so, so fucking difficult to entertain illusions at all. Like, it is extremely difficult for me to actually suspend disbelief in listening to an audio, for example. Which kind of ruins audios overall. I've done my damnedest not to let this completely ruin my enjoyment, which has sort of been successful, kind of. I tend to focus on the more behind-the-curtain stuff when listening, because my brain automatically deconstructs something the second I begin, for lack of a better explanation, consuming its content. So it is extremely difficult for me to persuade myself to suspend disbelief, to actually sink into any audio, really. And it's the same for movies, books. The only thing that I can't not sink into is music. I don't know why, that's just my brain. Everything else, though? I'm a bit too disillusioned to really enjoy in a context that the creator probably intended. I am It's difficult to really surmise this in words. Fantasy means something very, very different to me than it does to others. And that's no fault of others whatsoever. It's no fault of mine either. It's just a fact. Even in the audios I create, anything improvisational feels fundamentally vacant and hollow while I'm making it. While you don't hear the long silences where I'm trying to psych myself into portraying something genuine. No, they're there. Which is part of why I'm not so wild about doing improvs. Again, they are utterly vacant and hollow. They can sound genuine, sure. I'm a solid illusionist myself. It's much easier for me to suspend my own disbelief in making something if I have spent time crafting it, if I've actually worked on it. Sure, I can make something seem genuine to someone else with minimal effort. This isn't satisfying for me, usually. And in certain situations, I can find satisfaction in this while I make it. Those, what's satisfying to me tends not to be satisfying to others. That's just a fact. I tend to veer into too real territory, which I don't mind one bit, but that's because I kind of loathe escape from reality in and of itself. But I have a contentious relationship with escapism. Tends to lead to dissociation, which let's not go back to that state. Yes. In working with Loki, figuring out when you are casting illusions out of fear and a desire to control either your own perception for a short while or the perception of others. Figuring this out is crucial to working with him well. As an example, there's a subset in the Lokian community of people who are complete and utter Marvel fangirls who see Loki as 100% the Tom Hiddleston incarnation, and unfortunately they are very, very, very predominant in the god spouse category. And of course Loki tends not to mind this, at least for a while. He likes the attention, he likes the adoration. He also likes fucking with people. It is going to be an agonizing awakening for these people to realize that, yeah, Loki's been fucking with them this entire time, intentionally. It is going to be an extremely rude awakening. This is going to fucking hurt them to an extent where they may never fucking work with him again. However, this is entirely due to their own folly. If they are content with illusion, Loki will surely exploit this. In a way, this is a test. Do these people actually want him? Or do they want the illusion they have built up in their heads of him? There's a notable, marked difference between the two, which is something that bleeds over into making audios, I've found. Rarely does anyone actually want to get to know a performer on any level that isn't, I'm trying to find a way to be nice. It's not working, but I'm trying. How do I explain this? Rarely does anyone actually want to pull back the curtain in any meaningful way. I don't shy from this because it's extremely difficult to maintain any sort of illusion, in my view, anyhow. My perception is a bit difficult to bend. It's fucking difficult for me to bend, too. I'd rather know people as they are than whatever the hell they'd like to project to others. Which doesn't exactly work out terribly well, but that's alright. It's scary to actually be yourself. Difficult to feel remotely comfortable being yourself around others too. Especially when you don't know the person. Which, does anybody here actually know anyone? Not so much. We can give the illusion of intimacy, the illusion of sanctity, the illusion of comforting one another, the illusion of safety. Is it real? No. But toying with illusion is a fundamental facet of making audios, writing scripts, shit, interacting with the community at all. I find feeding into illusion draining more often than not. Which, I can justify from a writing perspective, but that's because I'm a fucking writer, of course I can. That's the kind of illusion I can work with. That's more malleable, more innate to me. Partly because I've spent an absurd amount of time reading and writing rather than, like, actually interacting with people. That's pretty much all I did in my teenage years, which... led to being pretty damn well read and becoming a very capable writer. However, not so great on the socialization front, but that's beside the point. I've drifted and I don't even know where in my notes I am. I've jumped around so fucking much. I organize things in like a sequential order, but have completely read shit out of fucking sequence. God damn it. Oh well, that's okay. Oh, that was probably really irritating. I'm sorry, sort of. It's just me, really irritating. I irritate myself too. This last weekend, I watched the second It movie, It Chapter 2. I've loved the book since I was a kid. It's fucking... Stephen King does some things well, but it's not like a Hallmark book by any means, and I don't mean like Hallmark Channel, I mean a masterpiece by any means. Anyhow, I watched the second It and was kind of surprised, pleasantly, by how fucking low-key the entire goddamn movie was. I mean, essentially it's about confronting childhood trauma that you don't fucking want to confront, taking it on head first, headlong, in order to heal from it. And Pennywise is so fucking low-key, and he is a goddamn trickster in the worst ways, really, and this is going to have some It spoilers. He fucks with your perception, which, I mean, in a way, does make him quite scary. If the effects were not so motherfucking cartoonish, maybe the movie itself would actually be scary, but... It wasn't in the slightest to me. It's difficult to scare me in horror movies, to be fair. I can usually sniff out jump scares before they happen. It's not difficult. I also worked at a fucking haunted house, so... it's easy for me to read when scary shit's, like, just about to pop up. Particularly, I'm a Wookiee awake. When, towards the end of the movie, Pennywise turned into that fucking huge-ass, weird-ass spider thing, and the only way to sink him back down, go back, brain. Spiders, Lokean, fundamentally Lokean, and that Pennywise, is essentially a weaver of his own story, and weaves the fears of others into this massive tapestry overtaking the entirety of Derry. Oh, he's a very Lokean character. A very low expression of a Lokean character, of course. But, oh, very Lokean. Very, very, very Lokean. Oh, especially with the childhood trauma aspect. But that's just that. That it requires believing, perceiving Pennywise to be small in order to actually defeat Pennywise. That kind of perception bending is so fucking innately Lokean. And more than that, the way he bends perception throughout the entirety of both movies, and in the Tim Curry fucking campass version too, and in the goddamn book, Pennywise is an extraordinarily Lokean villain. And what it requires in order to defeat him is equally Lokean. Confronting shit you don't want to fucking confront head on. Rewiring your brain, rewiring your perception in order to defeat your quote-unquote demons, which I say quote-unquote because if you perceive demons as things that need to be exorcised, not understood, and validated, gotten along with, learned to manage and temper down. You are approaching demonology from a fallacious and erroneous standpoint, but I digress. That it requires working through your fucking trauma to defeat fucking Pennywise and to actually live, and more than that, to save everybody in that fucking town. Everybody in Derry. Every fucking one! Especially the kids, especially the next generation, because if you do not work on your fucking trauma, you are going to indelibly cause fucking trauma into the next generation, and this is likely to echo in the generation after that, and the generation after that, and the generation after that. This is how intergenerational trauma works. This is how this shit gets perpetuated. Working through that is essentially working with Loki. Reparenting yourself. Especially when the fact of how you were raised is intrinsically not only traumatic but detrimental to your development. This is very innately Lokian. So, I kind of watched the entire movie with this fucking massive doofy fucking grin on my face because, oh, that was perfect timing. Of course, I would view it as a very Lokian tale. I can't not watch something and dissect it from a storytelling perspective. I can't. It's just what my brain does. It doesn't matter if I try not to. I was going to say compulsion, but I don't think it's really even a compulsion. It's just no, that's not the right word. It's not a compulsion. It's instinctive. For me. I don't have to try. I've never had to try with this. I don't know why. This is why I say I am a writer, although no, I do not have any published books. Yet. Really. The instinct I have for storytelling is something that I have always had. Which sort of feeds back into the illusion aspect. Because what is acting, really? And what is storytelling, really? Illusory. You are bringing bits and pieces of truth to any situation your brain can conjure. You're dressing them up in clothes that you create, or you adapt of your own will and volition in order to make the reality seem believable, to bend the audience's perception, to hopefully give them the feeling and an identical perception to the one you are playing with, the truths you are playing with. And if you cannot do this well, you're not going to be able to quote-unquote sell a performance, a story, your own fucking words, and by sell I mean make it believable. Others are not going to be able to feel this if you don't have those little granules of truth. It's not going to have an impact on your audience. And this isn't even a fucking method acting or whatever kind of thing. This is innate to acting in and of itself. If you cannot pull on the right heartstrings in yourself, you're not going to be able to pull on them in others either. If you cannot sell your own lies, and yes, these are ultimately fucking lies, you're not going to be successful at what you're trying to do. This is playing with illusion. And if you do this well, if you can do this in the right contexts, if you can keep this in a primarily fantasy context, and this doesn't mean like Harry Potter, Loder. If you can keep this in a fantasy context, rather than allowing it to bleed into your real life, it can be very, very beneficial. Even if you do allow this to bleed into your real life, it can also be very beneficial. Not necessarily to others, however, to you. Which is part of why I tend to get a bit triggered with acting. With some of my experiences in early life, learning early on how to pretend in order to appease others and keep myself safe was necessary. and I haven't been able to fully untangle that from performing itself, which has led performing to be fairly fucking triggering for me. And I don't mean this in an ironic way. I mean 100% fully fucking unironically. I cannot turn off the voice in the back of my mind saying, "You're lying, you're lying, you're lying, you're lying, you're lying, you're lying, you're lying. Why the fuck are you lying to everybody? Why are you doing this?" Which, imposter syndrome's kind of a thing. I have not been able to disentangle from my psyche, which makes acting kind of difficult. Which, while I am a very capable and I have been told talented actress, it's not something I see as a good thing. And while if I wanted to, I probably could find some measure of success with acting, I don't want to. Despite being told by teachers and instructors that, yeah, I have a gift with this. It's not a gift that I particularly want. It's not a gift that I developed in a terribly healthy way. It was a survival mechanism. And this is something that Loki's been trying to help me with, but it's not going well because I am very fucking resistant to seeing this as a good thing whatsoever. That's echoes of trauma. Echoes of echoes trauma. This is what I mean when I say that working with Loki requires heavy shadow work. He will demand this from you. And if you do not listen when he makes these demands, he will fuck with you until you listen, until you make an effort to internalize the lesson. And if you don't do this of your own will and volition, he will fucking trick you. He will play with your perception and then take it all away. He will do whatever is most impactful for you. Because this is how we learn the lessons that we most need to learn. They have to be impactful. We won't internalize them otherwise. Sometimes impactful means in a good way. Something that makes you feel so fucking good that you have to hold on to that feeling. That you can't divorce that feeling from anything, really. Sometimes this means suffering. Sometimes this means learning through pain, learning through fucking agony. He will not shy away from hurting you for your own good. And while this isn't something I will tolerate in anyone but him, that's because I do trust him. Being cruel to be kind is something I wouldn't be surprised to find out comes from him directly originally. Is this something I will tolerate in flesh and blood people? Fuck no. If anyone treats me as anything less than an utter equal, nah. Not down with that shit. However, I trust Loki enough to know what is good for me. If he's fucking with me, there's something I have to learn from it. He's not just doing it to do it. People, on the other hand, they mismanage their own power and exaggerate their own importance. This is them mismanaging their own self-imposed illusions, or if not mismanaging their own illusions, perceiving illusions in others where there may or may not be illusions. You can't know what someone else is actually thinking. Your best bet is to ask. To communicate. Clearly. Rather than to assume. you know. And this is something others have a lot of trouble doing with me, I have noticed. My low bullshit tolerance and lack of tolerance for general nonsense apparently makes me quite intimidating, as well as my brain overall, because I am extremely analytical whether I want to be or not. And when I am slighted, it's not pretty. Which can be alarming, coming from a cute little thing like me. However, I am much more understanding and compassionate than it seems like others are willing to believe. And that's fine. Any astrology nerds out there? I have an elevated Neptune. It is literally right on my fucking midheaven. People are going to project upon me, and this isn't even something that I can do shit about. I mean, it's taken quite a bit of internal work to learn when playing with these projections and perceptions is detrimental to me as well as others rather than for either of our good. And accepting that people are going to fucking project onto me regardless of what I actually am, who I actually am, what I actually fucking represent, stand for, believe in, all of that, that's just inevitable. I don't have to like it. I just have to fucking deal with it. And Neptune on the midheaven also is an elevated Neptune too, which, not exactly the same thing as having Neptune directly conjunct the midheaven, but it, your most elevated planet is the planet closest to your midheaven before the ninth house. Well, I mean, that also depends on which house division system you're using. Astrobabble. Your most elevated planet is the planet closest to your midheaven after or before. Like, before your ascendant or before your fourth house. It's whatever is on the left portion of your chart that is closest to the midheaven. That isn't another point like the ascendant or an asteroid, because that's... we're talking about planets, not asteroids. I'm rambling. How surprising. This is something else that kind of makes me think that it's more that Loki chose me than I necessarily chose him, because this shit would not be literally written in the stars otherwise. It's like, every time I look at my natal chart, that fucking Neptune conjunction is glaring at me like, hey, hey fucker, hey, look what you can do. More than that, look what I can fucking do. I don't have to want to be an illusionist. Truly, I fucking don't. I don't have to want to be Lokian either. Yet I am. Somehow this is just fucking innate to me. I don't have to want to learn how to responsibly manage illusion. And I also don't have to manage the illusions of others. In a way, that's kind of what all of being here is, really. Toying with illusion. For the benefit of others, but balancing doing this for the benefit of others with doing this for the benefit of myself. That's a challenge. Not an impossible challenge, but a challenge nonetheless. While learning to master illusion itself can certainly be exploited and used only for personal gain, that's not really what I am learning to master illusion for. I'm a storyteller. At the core, that's all. Well, I mean, not all. Every fucking individual on this planet is multifaceted. That is the curse of sentience. Well, not even sentience, really. Emotions in and of themselves are multifaceted. Wow. This is an hour and 21 minutes long so far. I've got a lot of editing to do, clearly. Hopefully this is gonna be fucking somewhat short. I don't know. It probably won't be. This is kind of just what happens when I turn the microphone on. I try to be, like, somewhat concise. It just doesn't fucking work. And see, I have notes this time and still fucking rambling. God damn it, motherfuck! Oh well. I'm looking at my notes. Oh, I skipped around like a motherfucker. Oh well. That's kind of just me. See, I don't even follow a linear train of thought when I'm trying to. Like, when I have laid out the linear line of thought on paper, my brain still fucking jumps around. This is a problem. Generally with, like, mostly with others and, like, in terms of, like, schooling. Okay. Bye-bye, notes. You go away now, notes. So. Yeah. Very eloquent. So, yeah. Hella eloquent. My brain is fixating on things that sort of rhyme. Itchy shoulder. Itchy. Itchy. Okay. If you're listening to this, I mean, like, why? I get that it's nice just to have someone else's voice in your ear, especially right now with all this fucking isolation going on. Hopefully there's been something worthwhile you've learned in all of this. If anybody is interested in me putting resources together for a more mythologically based rundown of Loki and working with him, let me know in the comments and messages. Either way, it's fine. I think the basis of this was covered in the video I enclosed in the last Loki and Ramblings by Aerith, but maybe not. Either way, it's fine. One last thing that I forgot to mention. I mean, there are many things that I'm sure I've forgotten to mention. That just kind of happens with me. I don't exactly worship any of the forces I work with. The closest I've ever gotten to any kind of offering to Loki is a tattoo that I have on my shoulder of one of the animals whose form he is known to take. In myth, not so much, but with people who work with him, yeah, we've noticed. And this is, on one hand, showing utmost respect and admiration for this animal in and of itself without factoring Loki in. However, when I got this tattoo, part of why I got it to begin with was as an offering of flesh and blood to him. I have every intention of getting Hugin and Munin tattooed on my opposite shoulder, one on the front, one on the back, as an offering to Odin. There's a lot of work I need to do before I will be ready for those. But you have to keep your chaos somewhat managed, under observation, and as Hugin and Munin are thought and memory, these are required to keep tabs on your inner chaos. And while I am not quite at a point where I can reasonably work with Odin, I'll get there. I am far from ready to actually have them done. I will. I'll get there. There's more work I need to do before then, and I'm not just talking like doing work to get the monies. I'm talking like internal work, and not only shadow work, but light work. Sure, Odin is by no means a chaosless deity, and with Odin, deity is a much more apt term than force, as I say with Loki. Although I still prefer to say force because I don't like even feeding into my god's egos. It's distasteful to me. I don't like this at all. And that's a personal preference more than anything else, but I commend you if you are able to sit through all of this. No fucking joke. Like, I know this is very long and probably more rambly than I am able to comprehend. If you have the patience for this, I applaud you. Thank you very much. I hope you learned something worthwhile. And I hope that you find something useful in all of this, more than just learning something worthwhile. It's nice to learn cool things, but it's more beneficial to be able to use them in your day-to-day life, I found. So I hope that you can too.